You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 18th of June 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Once again, we've reached the end of another week. The weekend is here. Everyone is looking forward to 2 days off work, getting out and enjoying life, and they're also looking forward to hearing from our guest today, who is, of course, Grandpa Dan. Grandpa, how you doing? How you doing over there in Texas?
I don't know if I can be called a guest. I mean, I'm just like a permanent fixture on Fridays. And I want to apologize in advance if there's some background noise on my end. It's because I am running the air conditioner. I don't care. I went ahead and took the trouble to translate the heat index into Faggy metric system. And when you account for humidity, our heat index today is going to be 39.44 degrees Celsius. So it is hot. I'm not going to sit here and sweat for the show. Y'all just going to have to live with background noise.
Jeez, I think we're about 17 or 18 degrees here, so it's twice as hot where you are, where I am here. And of course, this podcast is the hottest alternative podcast that there is out there, and we have some exciting news to discuss today. We're going to actually be talking about the Belarusian opposition leader, apparently the president, as they refer to her in Lithuania. That is Svetlana Tikhanovskaya. Belarusian opposition figurehead Svetlana Tikhanovskaya has called on Washington to impose tough new sanctions on some of the country's biggest employers, urging President Joe Biden to raise the issue with Russia's Vladimir Putin. Imagine that. You've got somebody that claims to be the leader of your country, and what is she doing? She is calling for sanctions on the country. Sanctions are an act of war. She's basically calling for Joe Biden to crash the Belarusian economy. And where does she get the right to demand this from? Well, she claims that she won the election. Is there any proof that she won the election? No, there is no proof of that whatsoever. There is a BBC news article saying that she claims she won the election. Basically, what she says is that a couple of polling stations said that she actually won in that area, and they've extrapolated it from that to say, well, if she won in these two or three areas in Belarus, that means she must have won in the whole country. Never mind the fact nobody had even heard of her before the election. It was her husband that actually stood for the election, but her husband was a criminal, so he was told that he couldn't actually stand in the election. And he was actually imprisoned for his crimes. And she said, well, I'll stand in the election instead. And then ever since then, she has claimed to actually be the president. And I've literally seen journalists referring to her as the president of Belarusia, talking to her, Miss President or Lady President, as they crawl and scrape before her, these horrible people that obviously really have it in for Belarus. And when you look at her platform, she says, well, my platform is that I want free and fair elections. I want protection for foreign investors. I mean, this is literally her platform, protection for foreign investors in Belarus. How can anybody in Belarus have any respect for this woman that is selling out her country? She's just absolutely horrible. She's not even a good mother. She's handed her children over to her mother, their grandparents, to actually look after. She says this is in case the real leader, Alexander Lukashenko, in case he kidnaps her children and puts them in an orphanage. She's not even living in the country. It's scandalous that anybody gives this woman any respect whatsoever. What do you make of Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, Grandpa?
She's an invention. She's an invented character. If you think of these things as kind of they're using like a Hollywood makeshift model, and you have these people and they're actors, and people get invested in watching like movies, or if they watch a regular TV show, and they you'll see these people and they'll start projecting like the character onto the actor, and they think the actor is the character. Well, it's kind of an extension of that onto the political world. This is an invention. She's an actress. She's just playing a role. Nobody knows who this person is. She didn't get any vote, but they did the same thing in Venezuela. If you'll remember, the U.S. government was going around referring to this guy, this rando that nobody really had ever heard of in Venezuela, and they were saying he's the real president, and it turns out he wasn't even on the ballot at the last. They were claiming that the real president of Venezuela cheated and won. This guy actually won, and it turned out the guy wasn't even on the ballot. She's kind of like that. They just pick somebody, and it's an invented character. So you know she's handpicked by the oligarchy. And what does she want? Oh, well, lo and behold, her platform is calling for outside foreign investors. In other words, the oligarchy needs to be able to plunder the country. We know how this works. We've seen this play out. We know the plan, as it were. But she's just a completely invented character. Now here she is, like you pointed out. She doesn't even live in the country, and she's demanding what? She's demanding that her own country be punished so that she can be installed as leader. There were international observers at the last election. Everybody said everything was fair and square. Everything was on the up and up. But this woman, who basically nobody even knows of except the Western media is talking about her, she's declared that it was fake. With, by the way, can we go ahead and say, with no evidence? We saw all the videos in the U.S. election where they were putting boards on the windows, obvious election fraud in your face, and the media just said, well, there's no evidence of that. I don't care if you have videos of people doing it. There's no actual evidence. Now we have this invented character going around saying, well, I actually won the election. It was a fraud. And the media is lapping it up, unsurprisingly, but they're lapping it up. They're not saying, well, she's claiming to have won the election with no evidence. It just highlights once again, you know, the doublespeak, how if it fits into the narrative, you know, then that's what they portray is the truth, regardless of what the actual truth is.
Well, I say international observers have said that the election was questionable, but the truth is the international observers refused to actually go to the election because they said, oh, Alexander Lukashenko hasn't made everybody wear masks, so we're not actually going to go there and observe it. And then they came out after the election and said, well, it hasn't been a free and fair election. Well, you weren't there to actually see, were you? Where is your proof that it wasn't a free and fair election? Well, Tikhanovskaya, who stood against veteran leader Alexander Lukashenko in last summer's disputed presidential elections, and it's only disputed by her, before fleeing to neighbouring Lithuania, made the call in an address to the US Senate's Foreign Relations Committee on Wednesday. I mean, how does this woman get to talk to the US Senate's Foreign Relations Committee? Who is she? She's nothing. She's nothing to do with Belarus. She doesn't even live in Belarus. She's not a part of the official opposition there. I mean, they do have opposition there, but if you break the law, then you can't actually stand for opposition. And she's calling for people to actually make war on our own country. That's what sanctions are. They are an act of war. They're just the predetermining bit before actually making the call to war. It means that the country is going to starve. It means that the people there are going to lose their jobs. I mean, it's a really horrible thing to actually call for against your country. And then to claim that you should be actually given any respect whatsoever as some kind of opposition leader when she wants to destroy her own country is absolutely ludicrous. I mean, I don't think I could get a chance to address the US Senate's Foreign Relations Committee. I should imagine that most countries would have a problem actually doing that. So why is it that this woman that claims to be the opposition to Belarus, why has she got this direct line to the US Senate Foreign Relations Committee, do you think, Grandpa?
Well, if we had an actual media, they would be asking the question that basically is sitting here percolating in all of our minds, which is who's paying this woman? I mean, she has to be paying rent. She has to be, you know, paying for her place to live, her food, or getting around. Somebody had to pay a ticket for her to fly to the U.S. to go to address this committee. Who's paying for all this? If we had an actual media, somebody said, well, who's paying for this? Because that could tell us a little bit about this person and what they're standing for and what their actual end goal is. I mean, everybody has an agenda. You could argue if somebody's agenda is good or bad, but everybody goes into something, especially politics, with an agenda. And if we knew who's paying for this woman to live the lifestyle she's living, then we'd have a good idea of who's backing her agenda and what that is. But we don't have real media, so those questions won't be asked. Now, Lukashenko was absolutely voted in by the people. How do we know this? Well, you compare it to the U.S. election, where, again, everybody saw the voter fraud, and you had this mass, basically half of the people that were like, no, the election was stolen from us. And you've seen all of this unrest. There's still people flying their Trump flags. There's still people talking about, Trump's going to be magically reinstalled as president. There's people that actually, everybody believes that this was a fake election, and that discontent is palpable when you're in Trump supporting areas. However, everything in Belarus has been nice and calm because everybody knew he was going to win. That's the guy. That's the guy everybody supports. I would be willing to wager, I don't live there, obviously, so I guess I can't say, but I'd be willing to wager that most people didn't even know who this woman is. And now here she is gallivanting across the world stage, making these demands. Somebody's paying for her to live. She doesn't work a side job. It's not like she's waiting tables, saving up her money so she can fly to the U.S. and demand sanctions against Belarus. Well, that's silly. Somebody is paying her. Why aren't we told who's paying for her lifestyle? Because, of course, that would crumble the narrative that they're attempting to create here.
Well, she argued that a concerted campaign from the West was essential to ousting Lukashenko. Otherwise, he would, quote, turn our country into the North Korea of Europe, opaque, unpredictable, and dangerous, close quote. And I'm sure you would be looking forward to that. I mean, maybe we'd have some Belarusian K-pop. Oh, no, that's South Korea, isn't it? I think Kim Jong-un is not too pleased with South Korean K-pop, actually. Or maybe it's just the male version of it, I was reading the other day. What do you think of her claims here that he's going to turn Belarus into North Korea, Grandpa?
I just feel like I should be inserting some music right here from my K-pop from my K-pop collection. Well, I think it's interesting. What she's proposing is to turn Belarus into the North Korea of Europe. I mean, you step outside of these constant narratives. I mean, what's the narrative about North Korea? It's the hermit kingdom. And Kim Jong-un, he just wants his people to be poor and miserable. But actually, the country's poor because of all the sanctions that the West has put against it. He would love to open up and probably have trade and do many of the things that everybody else likes to do, but they've basically put these oppressive sanctions and made the country poor and made the people poor. I don't think Kim Jong-un sits around and says, man, how can I make my people's life miserable today? Now, being against K-pop may be one of those ways he's making their lives miserable. But what she's calling for is to actually wreck the country. And you've pointed this out already earlier here in this very show. She's calling for wrecking her own country. She wants to turn them into North Korea. All these sanctions ever do is punish the average person. And she doesn't care. She wants to punish the workers. She wants to punish the average citizens. Why? Because of her agenda of bringing in quote unquote foreign investors, which means the oligarchs coming in and plundering the economy and plundering the country and putting everybody into debt and ruining the economy. She wants to ruin people's lives because she's the now self-appointed leader, I guess. What she's calling for is to turn it into the North Korea of Europe. The doublespeak here is just absolutely breathtaking. It's like, if you don't do these things to turn Belarus into North Korea, then it's going to turn into North Korea. It doesn't make any sense on its face.
Well, North Korea is 99.9% made up of North Koreans, and Belarus is 99.9% made up of Belarusians. So I guess you could say there is that similarity there. She urged the US to expand sanctions against Lukashenko's accomplices who finance his rule, including enterprises such as Belaruskali and the Motzir oil refinery. And state-owned industry is a key part of Belarus's economy, and the country is one of the world's leading producers of heavy machinery, with the sector employing large numbers of citizens. And that's because Belaruskali and the Motsia oil refinery are actually the largest employers in Belarus. And this is the main things that they produce. They produce heavy plant and farm machinery, heavy machinery, all that sort of thing. And she wants sanctions against them, which means that all the people that are actually working in Belarus that are a part of this economy, she wants them to all be unemployed and starving and angry. I guess she thinks that if they get like that, then they're going to be disgruntled and against the government. But I think they'll be able to see through this and see that it's actually down to her, that she is calling for her people to be made poor. I mean, Belarus does really seem to actually care about its people. This is why it doesn't allow foreign investment. It doesn't want foreigners to buy up parts of the country, to buy housing, buy industry. It wants to own its own industry. It's very proud of being a sovereign nation. It is quite close to Russia, but they're close, but they are separate. I mean, there have even been issues between Belarus and Russia. That, you know, it's not like they're part of the Russian Federation or anything like that. They're just allies with them. Lukashenko, to me, I mean, he seems to be a very good leader. He really does seem to put his people first. The fact that Belarus is not multicultural, I mean, it really doesn't matter what ideology that Lukashenko has. He is preserving his people, which is the highest good. What do you make of these sanctions that she's calling for here, Grandpa?
Once again, it's funny that she's wanting these sanctions against these entities because they quote unquote finance his rule. And again, we're not being told who's financing her. If we had any kind of honesty in media, they would be asking these questions, because anybody looking this is asking these questions. Now imagine that her platform now is that, you know, because Belarus has ridiculously low unemployment. I mean, they have a real unemployment level that it would be the envy of any Western country. So the people are employed. They're fairly happy. They're content. They're doing well, more or less. And she's got a platform that says, at this point, as we look at this as a whole, she has a platform that says we need to plunge people into unemployment, because that's what these sanctions would do. We have to plunge people into unemployment, make them poor, make them lose their belongings, their houses, probably scavenge around for food, because we know these sanctions, how they work. If they get extreme enough, how many millions of people died in Iraq because of these sanctions? She wants to do this in the name of what? Bringing in, quote unquote, foreign investors. This is her platform. She wants to bring in outsiders to plunder the economy. And to do that, she wants to make everybody else poor. She's openly calling for this, and yet we're supposed to take this serious. She's supposed to be the leader of the people, the real winner of the election. If she was running on this platform, I don't think she got any votes. If she was openly, I'm sure she wasn't. She probably gave some, you know, nice platitudes when she was campaigning, if she was even campaigning at all. I just think this whole thing is more or less made up. It's like Navalny in Russia. Who ever heard of the guy until the Western media started talking about him? Pretty much nobody. So she's, I can imagine her running on a platform during the election of, well, what's your platform? Well, let's see. First, we'll ask the sitting president, what's his platform? And he says, well, keeping everybody employed, making sure everybody's doing a little better. We're not going to do the multicultural thing. We're going to keep families together. We're going to make everybody's lives better. Okay, ma'am, what's your platform? Well, I want to bring in foreign investors. If we have to do that, we'll crush everybody's livelihood and make sure they're unemployed. Who the hell would vote for this person? This is only being played out, I believe, for the Western media. I don't think this is getting any actual serious consideration. I don't think the people in Belarus are sitting around going, wow, we really screwed up. We need this woman in charge. She'll wreck our economy and bring in foreign investors to go ahead and strip mine the economy like they've done everywhere else in the Western world. We're just so totally missing out. It is absurd. Who the hell would want that? Nobody wants that, but except apparently foreign investors, who I think it's a safe assumption is who's paying her, who's financing her little campaign here.
Well, it's not just that she wants to bring foreign investors in. She wants special protections for the foreign investors. Pretty much, I guess, like when we bailed out the banks because they failed. And it talks about trying to put sanctions upon these accomplices who finance Lukashenko's rule. But these accomplices, they finance Belarus. This is the thing. It's actually Belarus that makes the money from all of these enterprises, and that would be hurt by this. Blasting the call for targeted economic measures, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said in a statement later that same day that Belarusians work at these enterprises. How can one ask to target people, their own citizens, who have been creating a domestic product for years, decades? Imagine it, they take pride in what they actually create in Belarus, made in Belarus. It's a guarantee of a certain standard with heavy machinery and plant. And she is wanting to target that. She's wanting to destroy that. She's wanting to take that pride away from the Belarusians and give it to foreign investors. I mean, it's absolutely scandalous what this woman is doing. And as you point out, Grandpa, nobody in the mainstream media is questioning this. They're all on the Tikhanovskaya train, as it were. The opposition figure also urged Biden to raise her cause at an upcoming meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The two leaders are set to meet for the first time since Biden's inauguration in Geneva on June the 16th. And we haven't heard anything about this, but it is they do see it as important that they take down Belarus because it is right next to Russia. You know, they've got Ukraine now. They had their fake revolution in Ukraine, and they've been trying to set up this fake revolution in Belarus so that they can put NATO right on the border with Russia and then go in from there and start a fake revolution in Russia and take out Putin. And of course, Putin does get a lot of criticism, particularly from the Russian people. But you have to weigh up the way that he is compared to how the politicians in the West are. And when you look at it, you can see that, OK, he may be harsh on nationalists, but the West are harsh on nationalists. At least you have laws in Russia to prevent the propagandization of homosexuality to children. At least you have a constitution which declares that marriage is between a man and a wife. At least you have a constitution that says that Russia is for the Russians and that the Russians need to remain the majority in Russia. You're certainly not going to see the levels of immigration that you see in the West. There is some immigration there, but it comes from elsewhere in the Russian Federation. And you also have a very pro-Christian country. And also Putin is a big proponent of the multipolar world rather than the new world order. So when you look at it like that, you can, and you compare Putin to the leaders of the West, you can see that Putin is a vast improvement on the leaders of the West. But I'm sure for the actual Russians that actually live there, they're probably not very happy with him, and they think, well, you know, we quite like what the EU do. But if you look at what's happened in Ukraine since they had their revolution, and you compare Ukraine to Crimea, you can see that in Crimea, they have a much higher standard of living. Once Crimea was joined up with Russia, all the pensions went up. The economy got a huge boost. I mean, the Crimeans are doing really, really well. And when you look at the Ukrainians, I mean, they're just completely in debt and they're not doing very well at all. But it will really boil down to these Belarusians, whether they fall for the propaganda and they fall for the lies that they're being told. And of course, the Ukrainians did fall. We saw the Libyans did fall for the propaganda, and some of the Syrians fell for it. Really don't know whether the Belarusians will or not. I really hope that they don't. But that's what's really going on here. What do you make of her call here for Biden to take this up with Putin at the Geneva Convention, Grandpa?
Well, Lukashenko is a nationalist leader, so of course that has to be stamped out. They can't have that in any way, shape, or form. As I pointed out already, they have a ridiculously low unemployment rate. Where you have actual nationalist leadership, the countries do very well. I like how the Russian spokeswoman was so incredulous about this woman's statement and is pointing out how ridiculous it is. She's calling for her own people, supposedly her own people, to be targeted here. I mean, just let this soak in. She is calling for her own people, for the workers to be made poor, so that foreign investors, so the corporations, the big banks can come in and strip mine the economy. And she says this is somehow going to be better. How are you going to play that out to the people? How are you going to sell that to the people? I think this is just simply being sold to people in the West. I don't see how they can sell it to the people of Belarus. How do you go into Belarus and say, you know, it'll make your lives better if you're all broke and poor and unemployed, but the economy can be strip mined by global bankers and corporations. That'll make things a whole lot better. It's totally absurd. And I think the Russian spokeswoman's incredulous attitude here over this whole thing kind of speaks for all of us. And how is Biden supposed to bring this up to Putin? You need to recognize this woman that nobody's heard of before we invented her character, who says she's the real president because she wants to let foreign investors come in and strip mine the economy like they've done everywhere else. This is so clown world. We talk about clown world all the time. And this is just yet another just outright outlandish example of clown world. She's supposed to be an opposition figurehead, you know, an opposition leader. And she's calling to make the people poor so that the corporate oligarchy can come in and strip mine the economy. That's her platform. And we're supposed to believe that she has the real support of the Belarusian people. It's absurd on its face. Nobody's going to support that. But that's the narrative we're being sold here.
I think I should just expand a little bit more on what you were saying there, where you say that Lukashenko is a nationalist, because, of course, we've had Belarusians come in the chat room and say, he's not a nationalist, he's a communist, Belarus still has the KGB there. But he may have communist ideology or the remains of that. But the fact is, he's a proud Belarusian and he is trying to make certain that his country remains Belarusian. So he is a nationalist in the truest sense of the word. Nationalist coming from the word NATO, meaning a group of people from a shared birth and forming a society around a group of people with a shared birth. So he is a nationalist in that sense. He is an ethno-nationalist. His ideology may be in tune with communism, but right at the root of everything is him trying to do what is best for his people. And he bases who his people are on his ethnicity, on the fact that they all have a shared birth. I just thought I should clear that up. Well, Lukashenko recently met with Putin in the Russian coastal city of Sochi, with both sides reaffirming their warm relations and pledging closer cooperation in future. That must have really infuriated Tikhanovskaya, because there has been issues between Putin and Lukashenko, and really this has brought them closer together. If anything, Tikhanovskaya's drama in all of this has just brought them closer together, because Putin is realizing that Belarusia is now in NATO's sights. It's in the globalist sights, and he really needs to work closely with Lukashenko to prevent another color revolution taking place in the brother nation, which is next to Russia. Well, Tikhanovskaya claims she was the true victor in last August's presidential poll, which the opposition and many international observers say was rigged. And this is the point that I would question. I mean, this is even in Russia Today is actually where we're getting this news story from. So they are pro-Russia. But even they are saying that many international observers say that the poll was rigged. How can they? The international observers refused to actually go to Belarus because Lukashenko refused to put in COVID restrictions. So there weren't any international observers there. They were invited, but they refused to come along. So I don't see how any international observers can have the gall to say that it was rigged when they wouldn't know, that they refused to turn up. It was the same in Syria recently. Syria had an election and the international observers from the West said that it was illegitimate because they weren't there. Well, they were invited. They just refused to go. They also prevented Syrians that were living in Europe from actually voting in the Syrian election. The Syrians were invited to vote. There were election observers there from the Middle Eastern countries, but the West and America, they refused to acknowledge it. And Bashar al-Assad won with a landslide. And of course, they say that this was illegitimate, even though quite obviously it was quite fair and above board, and everybody had the chance to vote. So it's I'm surprised that RT will actually put that there, but I guess what they're doing is they're just trying to be balanced, which is something we rarely see in journalism today. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on all of this?
I wish they would have said she claims without evidence, because that's what we got with the U.S. 2020 election. I want to go back to this notion that Lukashenko is not a nationalist, he's a communist, because people get hung up on these labels, which in a lot of ways, maybe they're too confusing. Maybe people can't figure things out. You know, it's like in Russia, they have, you know, big celebrations over, you know, winning World War II, but yet, you know, they're not wanting to go. That doesn't mean Russia is the Soviet Union or that they want to somehow go to Soviet communism. I think the easiest way to look at this, and I'm going to totally steal from Dr. Johnson here, but I'm saying it up front so that, you know, that makes it okay. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he always says something along the lines of, you know, you're either at the end of the day, you either have some form of monarchy or you have oligarchy. You know, if you break it down and think of it that simply, then maybe it'll help people get past this. Oh, well, they have a entity known as the KGB still there. So communist. OK, but is it an oligarchy? Well, they have almost zero unemployment. The people are doing well. They have a huge manufacturing capacity. And yes, they have a single leader that's been running the country for years now. But the standard of living seems overall pretty good. They don't have multiculturalism flooding in. What this woman's promoting is oligarchy. I mean, that is literally her platform. She wants to bring in oligarchs to strip mine the economy. Now, you either have monarchy or oligarchy. If you think of it in those simplistic terms and don't get hung up on us, but communism, they have a red star. Oh my gosh, it's the USSR. That's just silly. Either have, you know, they hang different names, dictator, or he's a dictator. I saw when they were doing the Biden-Putin meeting, the U.S. media wouldn't even let anybody hear what they were saying. They were just talking over it. And this one U.S. woman reporter was saying about Putin, you have to remember, this guy's been in power for years. He is a dictator. Well, they have elections and he keeps winning the elections, as if there's something intrinsically positive about, well, you have to trade somebody out every so many years because that's my democracy. That never applies to U.S. Congress, by the way. It's okay if they're in there for decades and decades. But we have to swap our president out, whether he's doing a good job or not, every X amount of years, just because reasons. It's our values. But if you think of things in simplistic terms, like monarchy versus oligarchy, it's easier to understand these things and not get hung up on symbolisms and names. Obviously, they have a form of monarchy here. They have elections, but this guy is basically serving the role of the monarch. The opposite of that is what she's proposing, which is oligarchy. And if you want to know how that goes, look at all these Western countries that are run by oligarchy. Here in the U.S., I mean, our economy now is strip mined to the point because our entire economy is run on debt. And you see all this, well, the government is spending this much money. They're not. They're borrowing that money. And I'm not going to get off into how the money is actually put into circulation, but it requires debt. It has to be borrowed. The problem is the citizenry is tapped out. Everybody is so buried in debt, they can't afford to borrow any more money. So now they're having to use the government to do that. They want everybody enslaved to debt. They want everybody enslaved so that they can't think outside the box. They just constantly worried about drowning in debt while they strip mine the economy. We see this under the COVID thing. Trillions of dollars going to the oligarchs. Everybody else is getting poor. And she's openly calling for that system in Belarus. Now, would you rather live under a nationalist leader where everybody's working and you have a healthy, vibrant manufacturing sector? Or would you rather live under lockdown where all of that money that could be being distributed to the citizenry, not by welfare, but by work, because you're producing something, you're actually doing something positive by manufacturing things that people are going to use to do things such as produce foods or build roadways. Would you rather have that, or would you rather be locked down while all of that money is strip mined out and sent to these billionaires, these corporations, the big banks? They get richer. This is a black and white choice that is presented here. You can have Lukashenko, you can have a nationalist leader, and everybody's doing pretty good, or you can have your opposition leader who's not being circumspect about what she's for. She's for what the West has, strip mining the economy. Oh, but hey, you can have more gay anal. You can have child trannies. You can have all of this weird sex stuff that's promoted as freedoms in the West. There's your choice. You get monarchy, you get oligarchy. She's proposing the oligarchy to counter the monarchy. I don't know. Maybe I give people too much credit, but I have a hard time thinking the Belarus people are going to be stupid enough to fall for that.
Yeah, you're right. You know, he is like a monarch. He's looked upon as the father of the nation. I forget what the term is, but they have a special phrase for him. And of course, if somebody is continually voted in again and again and again, that's because what they're doing is right. Well, earlier this week, the former candidate compared the crackdown against those protesting the result to the 1968 Prague Spring in a visit to the Czech capital. Well, no, I would say it's not so much like the Prague Spring as like the Arab Spring. And all we have to do is look at Libya to see what the end result of that was. She has embarked on a tour of many European nations, meeting with government representatives and pressing for support in efforts to push Lukashenko out of office. I mean, this woman is just a bold-faced traitor, isn't she? Trying to call for sanctions. She's trying to get European nations to go into her country and push the legitimately elected leader out of office. I mean, it's absolutely scandalous that this woman has the front to call herself a Belarusian. Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
I'd like to go on a world tour, Sven. You know, we could hang out, and then I could fly over to Germany. Just go around. I'm going to go on a world. Only problem is nobody will write me a check to do that. Nobody will give me free visa to just travel around. She's traveling the world. She's on a tour of European nations. How much does that cost? It seems like somebody somewhere would be curious of who's paying for that, because obviously she has an agenda, and who's paying for all of this thinks that will forward the agenda that they want. And that's really where it comes down to. This woman's pushing an agenda for someone. She doesn't have it. She's a paid employee. I always say here in the U.S., people get mad at the government. You know, the politicians, you have to remember the politicians are nothing more than middle management. She wants the job of head middle manager. She wants this nationalist leader replaced with a middle manager for the oligarchy. And she wants to be that middle manager. And that's what she's doing. She's lobbying for the job. She will replace the nationalist with a middle manager for the oligarchy. And she is the person. She is the woman for the job. She's going about doing a European tour. And nobody is the least bit curious who's financing that. The money just came out of thin air. She just managed to just dropped in her bank account. It's like magic somehow. It's obvious who's financing it. It's obvious who pushes these color revolutions. And it's obvious on his face the agenda that she's pushing and who she's pushing it for.
Imagine that, going on a tour around the world, asking countries to invade your own country. I mean, can you get any lower than that? Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.